Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Good morning.
Happy Monday.
Best day of the week. Let's go. We don't have Michael, so we can finally get it out.
I know, poor Michael, though. He's a little under the weather today, so.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're, you know, globetrotter, entrepreneur, you know, setting up castle excursions and membership parties out in Europe. So, must be nice, Golden. Must be nice.
Yeah, and also apologies to our listeners. I'm microphone-less. We're having some technical difficulties on my side. So hopefully this will have that resolved next Monday.
Yeah, hopefully we'll, you know, just start forking out more money to better microphones every year. No, super excited that it's just you and me this time. We rarely get to do like a switch or coordination between the hosts where it's like Michael and Jamie and then you and me or you and Michael. So it's always great to see you again, my friend. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was great. It was so low-key. Did some work, lots of long walks. It's like a cool 70 degrees in Miami, so I know that everybody else in the country is dealing with much worse temperatures, but it's like really nice to be out. And then cooked a lot and went and saw Poor Things, which was incredible. If anyone's looking for like a movie theater, a movie to go see in theaters, Poor Things is great.
Poor Things. I've never even heard of it.
It's really trippy. Really, really trippy. But like a really interesting story. So yeah, definitely not for little kids.
Okay. Good to know. Cause I haven't gone to a movie theater in a while. So maybe I'll add that to my to-do list this week. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Well, we have a special guest this week. As you know, we don't do guests often on this show, but this one just makes sense. I think following our predictions roundtable, we're going to get to chat with Max Farley, CEO and founder of Sojo, also a great partner of the podcast. But Brandy, there's one thing we have to give the listeners before we introduce Max to the rest of our audience is a Brandy rant. We got one queued up. So
yeah,
I know Scott with the Art of Hospitality podcast is really going to love this. So, you know, let's dive into this this quick Brandy rant here.
Yeah, just a little rant for your Monday. So if people might not be familiar with a company called Lux Urban Hotels, but they're a Miami operator that have gone public They have been around for a long time under many, many different monikers. Some people might know them when they started as U-Rent, but basically just like this whole history of shady operations. As a writer at Bleecker Street Research said, the bed sheets should be made out of red flags. And, you know, being in Miami, we've known about them for a long time. Lots of shady behavior, but they just keep like, I don't know, they're like a phoenix reborn every time something happens. The decision to go public is wild because your financials are obviously going to be under scrutiny. And theirs were not legit, which is what's happening now. Like there's, you know, there's all sorts of things coming out. It was a very, very flimsy house of cards. But this just, the fact that they were able to go public, I think this just drives me insane because I know all of the work that we have to do for our due diligence, like when we were raising our Series A, when we're going to get new landlords, all of the scrutiny, all of the underwriting that we do, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then this perpetual red flag just gets to rebrand rename and go public. And I mean, obviously it has all kind of come crashing down, but it's also another company that kind of like adds a stain to the industry. And it's just, it's all these things that happen make it more and more difficult. I mean, at least in this case, you can say you're the complete opposite of these, of this operator, if you have a legitimate business. So that's a good way to differentiate yourself. But I mean, a lot of people are going to be casualties of this, you know, all the employees or landlords. And for the landlords, maybe some more due diligence next time. I don't feel bad for anyone that helped take them public, that this, like, you should have known. There should more due diligence should have been done. But yeah, it's just incredibly frustrating, but slightly vindicating now to see, you know, kind of everything fall.
Yeah, I think a theme too, like if you have a business model like this, obviously a couple other scenarios earlier this year with closures are a little bit different. But I think when the bad apples in the industry like this, you know, get to a certain point, their true colors really will show. Usually always comes back around. It doesn't take long for word to spread in this industry, as you and I both know. So I think, yeah, it's kind of good that it's finally getting the spotlight that it deserves in the sense of shady company, not doing the best. So yeah, good brand.
Just a tiny one.
Yeah, just a tiny one today. All right. So for all of our live viewers, we have quite the treat for you. Jason, Kat, thank you guys for tuning in. If you are watching live, queue up any questions you might have for Max from Sojo as we get ready to bring him on. So, Brandy, if you're ready, let's get Max out here. All right,
let's stop making it.
All right, here we go, Max. Max Farley, welcome back.
Hey, how are you doing? Good to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for hopping on.
Of course, always a pleasure.
Yeah, love the soaps and the shampoos behind you. I love seeing the amenities.
Thank you. Slinging soap
as I've heard from some Sojo members. How is everything going for you guys? Starting off the year pretty strong, right? So I want to hear, how's everything just going high level?
Great. I mean, great team, grew a ton last year. Really built out a ton of the team, a lot more of the tech and infrastructure. And this year's a scale year for us. And so it's a second full year in business and having a blast. So it's going to be fun. It'll be a good year.
I love that. A scale year. I can't believe you've only been in business for 2 years. I feel like you've become such like a mainstay in the industry. That's really awesome. I also have to say, I was doing some house cleaning and I found another box of Sojo, you know, merchandise. So it just keeps appearing in my house, which I love. I'm like, I'm going on a trip next weekend, throw that in the toiletry bag. Awesome. Love to have it.
Awesome. Yeah. It's felt like a lot longer than 2 years. All of our employees say it's dog years in terms of how hard we're running and how fast we're running, but it's been fun.
I'm going to steal that, dog years. It does feel like that. It honestly feels like, holy crap, like this short amount of period of time has gone by, but at the end of the day, it feels like we've been going for decades almost. So yeah, I don't know, maybe our faces will soon to start to show, like, the aging. But
does that mean I've been working here for like 40 over 49 years in dog years?
So good. Well, hey, we kind of queued it up, Max, in the sense of we've had an operator roundtable, we did a predictions roundtable with a bunch of other podcasters and operators in the industry. And a lot of the theme of, obviously, like, I think, like, saving money, watching your P&L, being frugal, being lean, operating at scale, but like actually providing good service, all these things are being talked about. I would love to know from your point of view from 2023, what was the biggest reflection/takeaways that you guys had? You did say behind camera that you weren't able to really rest and take as much time off during the holidays as maybe you'd like, but I would love to know if you did have a moment to reflect, what was that reflection on?
I mean, just, I think lucky, being grateful and humble. I mean, we did so much as a team in 2023, and it's all because of the different members of the team and the great customers that we have. And so just learned a lot. I think for us, it's we got a lot of scar tissue in 2023. And so the idea is, like, how do you not go and repeat those same things in 2024? Like, we should go grow the same amount as a team, but it should be, you know, less frenetic and a little bit more enjoyable. But just really just thankful, just really happy to be part part of an amazing team. And it's been a really fun journey, and the customers are great. They're super patient with us. We mess up all the time, and they're so nice and so grateful, and they help us learn and get better. And so just really grateful and thankful.
I have a question. Can you share one of those things that gave you some scar tissue? I think a lot of our listeners have built businesses and can maybe commiserate with some of those.
Yeah, I think growth can hurt, right? Growth is fun, but I mean, we grew 400% last year. Like, you're just not staffed. Your tech's not ready for that. You're not staffed to support the clients. You know, we'd bring on a couple thousand homes to the platform a month, and we would just have, you know, our poor account managers are drowning every month. And like every subsequent month, the sales team's like tossing them a baby, right? It's like, here you go. Here's another one. Like, don't drown. Catch it. So yeah, I think just, you know, not investing enough in team and infrastructure ahead of the curve is just is something that you're always sprinting to catch up with. I mean, good problems to have, but still painful for the team when they're in it.
Yeah, well, because you're always trying to find that balance of like, okay, we haven't added all this yet that's going to help pay for this staff. And so we don't want them to be on the team for too long, but right. Then you need to have them there long enough. And I mean, we totally do that. We have like set ratios for certain departments. We're like, okay, when we hit those, then we add more. But then there's other departments where you're like, it's kind of like you figure it out in the moment and it's you're probably like 3 weeks too late. And there is a little bit of that friction there, but I think it's great. That's a good learning lesson that I think is applicable to pretty much anyone trying to scale.
Agreed. Yeah, you're building the engine while you drive the car, and that's hard to do. And
exactly.
Very
challenging. Exactly.
Yeah, or building the plane while you're flying it. Yeah, yes. The same. I don't know what's scarier. Both are pretty scary. But I'm very curious too. I got to ask this question to the operators of the year. Basically saying like, what was the biggest winner on the tech side for them, whether it was something that they had in their tech stack or that they didn't. I would love to know from your point of view, who was the operator of the year for 2023 for you, whether they're a client of Sojo or not. Who do you think from a brand and a business really did stand out as an operator overall?
That's a tough question. There's so many different examples that come to my mind. I'd say the one that has been most impressive to watch for the last year or so has been Vacation Rental Collective, VRC, about 1,000 homes out of the Rockies, client of ours, which is of course biased in my opinion, but they've just gone through so much change, and it's such a complex operations with, you know, 10, 15 plus locations, and just seeing how they go in and address cleaning issues, operational issues, scale issues, standardization. It's been just really thematic and really just not, it's never sort of ready, shoot, aim. It's just been really, really methodical in how they've approached operations. And so they've been fun to watch. And we do things the opposite sometimes, where we're just, you know, trying to get out there and, you know, hoping that we do more right than wrong. And it's really great to see someone just really take their time and be methodical with rollouts and strategy. So been a pleasure getting to know them over the last year.
I'm going to say, do you think there's like, because that's a pretty big lesson, right? If you're being methodical and you're actually able to go slow but grow fast, because like slow is fast in this kind of scenario, it feels like. Where do you think, you know, kind of pulling into that theme and reflection from them, do you think this is going to be applicable to 2024 more often? Or do you think as you're going through Sojo's like scale year, right? Like this is a big scale year for you guys. Do you think there's some methodical slowness involved, or do you think it's just pull the trigger name?
I think it's all relative. I mean, we won't grow 400% this year. And so we're trying to go out and pace growth and profitability and scale and just we want to do things better and have less mistakes this year. I think as an industry, I think that's also where the theme's going. You know, I think even with your rant, I mean, I think a lot of the times, you know, truth takes the stairs. And I think this is going to be a year where people have to sharpen up and people have to prove that they've got good, durable businesses. And that's not just from a vendor standpoint, but also from an operator's perspective.
I love that phrase, truth takes the stairs.
Yeah, I was like, I'm writing that down. Yeah.
But I think that's, you know, that we're all kind of hearing the same things where profitability and like the expectation that you would scale another 400% in this, like, that's just not realistic. Yeah. And I think that it's great that you're not kind of chasing these massive growth targets. You know, growing and scaling is important, but doing so in a way that doesn't destroy your business in the process is also important. And focusing on the profitability. I'm curious from the, you know, you kind of see the vendor landscape, and we've already seen some acquisitions this year. Do you see more of that happening? Do you think that we might see some mergers? Like, kind of what's your feel for, or your opinion on the vendor landscape?
I think so. I mean, I think you've got such a like high volume of vendors, guilty party, myself included, that jumped into the space in the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. I think it'll just depend on where those companies are in their, you know, in their growth path and their inflection points. I mean, it's going to be a hard year from a capital raising perspective for the young companies out there. I mean, the VC world's a completely different landscape. Yes, the short-term rental market is proving to be resilient, but that doesn't mean that everything else that's allocated across those funds is, you know, probably in the tank. And like, that's going to be a really challenging year for people to go out and raise additional capital, depending on, you know, where they are. So yeah, I think you'll see some mergers. I think you'll see, you know, the stars are, the tier one guys are going to continue to perform. But I think in terms of new entrants, and then the, you know, people that don't have those durable, you know, good scalable business models, it'll be a challenging year for them to go raise capital.
Yeah, I think another challenge for vendors will be, even if they have a great product, let's say they raise the money, convincing operators to change whatever that piece of tech is. Like right now, there's such a huge cost with switching a lot of your tech. So, I mean, I would say personally, and I would wager that there are other operators, like I'm going to stick with what I have right now, even if it might not be the most optimal, because the cost of the unknown and also of changing was so great that like, I can control these variables that I'm familiar with right now.
Totally agreed.
I'm curious, just from, you know, looking at all this, it's, you know, we talk about, you know, profitability and operating at scale. And like, I think this has been talked about maybe every week since we started the new year, like every week, whether it's on this show or many other shows. I'm curious, just from a standpoint of like where you see things, Max, in the sense of, you know, this is such a talked about theme, and like, I guess I'm trying to phrase it in a certain way, but with that being said, like, how important is product going to be for you? Because I've seen a lot of, like, you guys play in two different spaces, in my opinion. You have the tech side of the product with Sojo, which is tech that you don't have to see. Like, it's plug and play. We sync up with your calendar, with your operation system, and we automate everything for you, which is great. It saves operators time. But then also you have the, like, actual physical products. Like, I'm a bit holding some right here. And it's just like, how do you balance the scale on the operations side while also focusing on quality of product? And I think this is going to be such a big thing for both vendors and operators when they look at product, whether it's home, whether it's the actual tech, whether it's a physical thing. I would love to know like your approach on product this year.
It's hard. I mean, we run two very complex different businesses, right? I mean, you have an entire tech stack that we have to go run, and the automation has to work, and everything has to be seamless and painless for the client. And we have to continue to evolve that product. And then you have physical goods, and you can't skimp on quality, right? I mean, you have to continue to innovate. You have to continue to develop better products, and you have to be sharp on price. And so it's complicated, but those are our two primary goals. I mean, if we don't do that, our clients leave and we won't have success on customer acquisition. I mean, we've got a good quality product today. We brand really well and the tech works. And so I think we just have to continue to go, you know, brick by brick, just keep building. And so we can't, you know, there's so many other things we can do and so many things we can focus on without sacrificing quality. It's too on theme for who we are and really the value prop that we're offering the clients. And the last thing we want is for someone to get a phone call that says, hey, my shampoo was bad, or I had a bad experience with the amenities. Yeah. That's game over in this industry. Cause as you referenced, it's just way too small of a network to be going and taking shortcuts.
There's a quote or a clip that Natalie Palmer said on our predictions roundtable last week. And sorry for all the listeners to keep bringing this up, but it's really top of mind for me because she said, I would rather list less amenities or less things in my home to set the expectation instead of like, hey, I'm going to put a sauna, I'm going to do all these things, and then like have them have that expectation of it working perfectly. And then they get in and the sauna is not working great, or the hot tub's down, and you know, all these things, right? And that the guest is anticipating the stay with all these amenities, and yet they don't work. The door code didn't work at check-in, and the shampoo was horrible, and or out. There was no shampoo even left. It was just an empty container. All these little things. Where's your mind go when it comes to the expectation around amenities?
I think from our perspective, we've seen less is more in terms of the actual quantity of amenities. It's all about the quality. I mean, we have people all the time that'll go out and they'll want to do guest gifts and they want to go do 5-6 things. And then they do it for, I mean, we'll tell our clients what people in the space are doing, what they're having success with, but they make the ultimate decision on our platform. And they'll do 5 or 6 things, and they got a very small budget, and so it ends up looking tchotchke, right? Where it doesn't look great. And so fast forward 6 months, and they're going, man, no one's taking our gifts. Can we go and, you know, instead of 5 gifts for $25, can we do 2 for $25, right? Like, let's go and make something. Let's go put more value, some take home value to the client versus just postcards and stickers and this like just stuff to have in the home for the sake of saying you provided something. And so I think, you know, quality is always going to be better than quantity in these types of things. And I completely agree with the quote that you referenced from last week.
Yeah, I feel like you want, when you arrive somewhere, whether it's a hotel or, I honestly think this is about a lot of conference swag. I now have a rule that I don't take anything home from a conference because I'm just like, oh, look at all of these pens that I have or socks or whatever it is. And if you go to a home for vacation, we are pretty minimal on guest gifts. We'll do, if we find someone's coming for like an anniversary or a big birthday, we might leave like a bottle of champagne or something like that. But we didn't want to start setting these expectations of either spending a lot of money on like a really high quality gift, and then that line item gets out of control. But then we also don't want to be putting in something that's like just kind of cheap and tacky, because that just makes everything else look cheap and tacky and is probably just a waste. Like, are they taking it or not? You want, to your point, like you want something that people are going to actually like, maybe enhances their stay or that they want to take home. What's like the most popular item or one of the most popular items that people like to get, like for that, you know, value for your dollar guest gift?
I'd say in the Gulf Coast, in any beach location, we have dry bags. Branded dry bags are just a huge hit because you can use it throughout your stay. It's small. You can roll it up and take it home with you. You can put beers in it. You can put towels in it. You can put toys in it with the kids. It's very multi-purpose and it's not a high price point. And so we've seen that be really successful with all of our beach clients. And you could do the same thing in the mountain locations too, but we've seen a lot of adoption in the beach markets there.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I'll definitely be using it for the beers. So that's my use case there. I love that. I don't know. I really want to feel like, I feel like there's a, I'm trying to put words to this and I'm probably stuttering over it because of early Monday morning and I don't have enough coffee in me yet, but I want to find like the solution or formula to like operational, I guess, headaches, right? Like you guys have this automated and that's super nice. And I was talking to Marsha while we were here in Denver, just doing like a monthly, you know, team call basically, and going over like it's the tech that you don't see, right? And like I think we need more of that in the industry because a lot of it is so either like UI UX like is horrible or it's so complicated and there's so many like steps in order to just complete a simple task. I'm curious, do you think we're like kind of going into the message you just said earlier, do you think simplicity is going to be the key for technology in this industry moving forward in 2024? Or do you think people are still going to keep building these features or products that really a lot of people don't need? If I see another like virtual guest traveler guide thing, I'm going to probably like want to go play in traffic, but that's just, I don't know, something I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out like this landscape between simplicity, automation, good user experience, and you get to play in this world. So I want your take.
Yeah, I don't think property managers are looking for another login, right? Like that's certainly, yeah. they swivel seat a ton already. And so I don't think they want to go like, oh yeah, this is great. And like, I don't think that's what they're yearning for. And so yeah. I think that manifests itself in a couple of ways. Like we're not actively, like Sojo has a path to go release our own UI, but it's not like we are the tech that you don't see. And people love that, right? I mean, they love the onboarding process from the times clients sign up to when they're receiving their first package. It's averages less than 30 days. and it's not a lot of work, right? And they don't have to go log in and, you know, do all the stuff. We do that for them. That's what's built into our platform. And so I think you'll continue to see adoption of tools like that. And then I think partnerships are key, right? I mean, I think, you know, people that have a large client base, I think they'll go, vendors will go, and I mean, we're doing this with our, you know, our number one partner in the space today is Breezeway, right? And so we're doing this with Breezeway, where people can, you know, we're rolling it out here and before spring break, but you'll be able to go, you know, opt into, you know, soaps and sundries with Breezeway, where you don't even talk to Sojo, right? And it's not another user interface. It's you go opt in on your Breezeway platform and you activate the Sojo platform in the background. So I think there's, you got to do innovative stuff like that, where you can, you know, give value to clients without asking them to go figure out another piece of tech, do another onboarding, remember a login, train the team, roll it out to the team. I mean, I think they're just overwhelmed at this point.
Yeah.
I can confirm. You're just like, every time you think of, I think that's the other piece of like, what would make operational problems easier? How do you make the operations more efficient? And it's not adding more tech. It's big, like the big problems are like, how do I get my housekeeping team around this giant geographical area when there's a lot of traffic, and also have them clean larger units than they're used to at a hotel, like for a lower cost? Like, it's not, and there's, to my knowledge, there is no piece of tech yet that has mastered that. And so to your point, like partnering with someone like Breezeway, also big fans of Breezeway on this pod, you know, like you can, that's great for you. You have access to all those clients. And then for Breezeway, they get to add another like bonus feature. And for the client, you don't have to go out and like deal with it. Like a whole sales process, it just drives me insane. So I think that is a great idea and leveraging that. Do you see yourself also integrating with more of the big PMSs? So if someone doesn't use Breezeway, but they're using Guesty or Hostfully or whatever, just integrating directly like you do with Breezeway?
We do. We've got a lot of those direct integrations already done. And we love them, and those are great relationships. You know, I think they're still very transactional. And so to me, the ones that are, you know, partnerships are different than transactional relationships. And so we look to go drive value through partnerships, not just, I mean, the sharing of the data is great with a PMS, but we want to go find ways like we do with Breezeway to really go drive value for the client. Right. I mean, us doing things, you know, building tech for tech's sake is not what's going to continue to be successful in 2024 and beyond. And so you got to go find partners that can, that think the same way and can help you accomplish those goals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. The marketplace is getting like thicker and thicker, I guess, in the sense of a lot of vendors, I think trying to go the route of like, hey, we're going to build a direct integration. And they're trying to, I think what you just said, build it for tech's sake. Like, hey, like we just need to have this because everybody else has this. In reality, Michael, if he was on the show today and not sick, he would have said like the partnership route is the way to go, because he was one of the first ones to really do that in the industry with NoiseAware and Breezeway, to then a couple other like back-end integrations that really actually are way more strategic, way more beneficial than the transactional relationships that a lot of vendors have. So I'm hoping that the vendor landscape slows down a little bit in the sense of new companies popping up. I don't think we need another new startup, at least in the current, you know, way we're seeing them, right? Another PMS, another lock, another this, another dynamic pricing. Like, we don't need to see more of these similar category startups. I think we need to see innovative ones that are like kind of what you guys are doing and able to build partnerships. So do you also see that in this like landscape of vendors? Because you guys probably get compared, not compared, because there's not really any real competitors to Sojo, but in the sense of like, do you guys get, I guess, put on that same chopping block as often compared to those other categories?
No, we don't have competitors, and so we don't, and we're still figuring out how to really position ourselves well. So we don't get put in the chopping block or in that same category. I mean, I agree with you. I think there's, I'd love to see more startups that are really tackling back of the house operations issues. I mean, there's no shortage that are helping the product manager derive value. I mean, there's no shortage to your point of locks and pricing tools and this, like that's the, you know, those are pretty. That's been a pretty successful space for startups over the last, you know, 5+ years. There's not a ton in the back of the house operations. And so, you know, I think the the profitability and sharpening, and how do you go and become a better operator and scale, or just become a better operator at your current scale? I mean, I think there's still a lot of blind spots there in terms of tools that can really derive value for the product manager. And I'd love to see them. They'd be great partners for us. I mean, that's what we're out here trying to do. And we've got great partnerships like the Breezeway one, but I'd love to see more, because then the product managers are yearning for it. Every panel I sit on a conference, they're all talking about like, yeah, I know, like, from a booking perspective or a revenue perspective, like, I've got my choice of tools, right? But I would love more dashboarding and reporting and optimization type conversations with people in the tech space on the operational side.
So you're saying we need more Jonathan Wicks from Well and Good?
Yeah, absolutely. Big fan, really big fan.
Yeah, I think for us, the data visualization has been the most helpful. We've built out this really robust dashboard that has all the components from our commercial department. So revenue distribution, marketing, we can break it down all these different ways. And we have a real clean snapshot into that. And we're working on the ops version of it. But this is all, again, all something that we've built ourselves, taking the data from our various systems. But I think that's how you can, as an operator, like, see the real patterns that are forming. And it can help you catch things, and better than going through like line by line, like an Excel sheet, basically. So I think we have like the team and some contractors that have the know-how, but for a smaller operator, you're not going to go and build out your own database and all that stuff. So yeah, I think that's a great opportunity for better reporting, as like unsexy as that sounds.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And not to keep quoting roundtable stuff, but I think even Robin Cragen from Movie Mountains was talking about just like, hey, like, we really have been just spending time sharpening our pencils and like going over the budgets and making sure we're not like exceeding things here. Like, just the unsexy part of business. But to me, that's the sexy part of business, right? Like, it's focusing on the little things that build up into the quantitative like add-ons to the yearly profit or to the efficiencies that you can find. And so I think, like, for me, that does get exciting, even though it's the boring, tedious work. I don't know about you, Max, if you feel, are you like head down, build it out? Or are you kind of like, hey, I want to try a bunch of different stuff? And just like, I don't know, where do you land in that sense of like sharpening the pencil, getting really defined in the business? Where do you land on that operator scale? Are you visionary or an integrator?
I don't think visionary. I don't know. I mean, it just depends on what the business needs at the time, right? I'm probably, you know, pretty mediocre at both at the end of the day. But operations is at our core. I get really excited about solving problems operationally, internally, because those end up leading to, you know, things we can solve for our clients. And so I love solving problems. And so I think if that's that, for us, that's visionary, because that's how we then go and, you know, the flywheel kicks in, and that's how we go build tech to go get ahead of it the next time. But I love being able to get, you know, roll the sleeves up and solve problems for clients.
I love that. And one prediction for this year, what's your prediction if you had one?
we've not seen the last of, nothing revolutionary. Well, I wish I could come and tell you something. I'd echo what people have said on your show already around, I think it's gonna be a really tough sledding for fundraising this year for all of the vendors in the space. I think people underestimate how tough the market is out there. And I think that also is the same for, you know, institutionally backed prop managers. I think they're going to have a tough year.
Hmm. Brandy, any thoughts?
I don't disagree. Like we've talked about, like, if you have been relying on funding and we're looking to like get another round to push you through like the next growth phase to get to profitability, I don't think that funding, or at least not in the quantities that people are expecting, will be available. And I do think it's going to be a difficult year, but I'm choosing to remain optimistic, because otherwise, how are you doing it every day? But I think that it's kind of like a really, really hard puzzle to solve. Like, if you have one of those like paperclip puzzles, or a puzzle that's all one color, like, you can still do it. It just takes like some real determination and a lot of coffee.
Well, as Max said earlier, you know, truth takes the stairs. So it's going to be a slow run, but if we all take the stairs together, we should at least enjoy the pain a little bit less, or a little bit more. There we go. Enjoy the pain a little bit more.
Well, great quads at the end of that staircase, you know.
100%. Well, I'll have our summer bods. We'll be ready. We'll be ready for summer. We'll be on the vacation train. Max, seriously, really appreciate you being on the show. If you had one thing for the listeners to take away from this conversation, what would that be outside of your bold prediction?
We're here to help. So, I mean, as soon as you need help back in automating back of the house operations, we'd love to learn what we can help with and help solve that problem. That's what we're here to do. So, excited to meet those new customers. To your point, it's an interesting dynamic where it feels like it's going to be a hard year coming up, but we're going to grow. The industry is going to grow. It's just going to be, you have to do it in the right way, which hasn't always been a requirement in the last couple of years. Just excited to go continue to grow the business, meet new customers, meet new people and solve problems.
Yeah. And the key to winning is just staying in business. Just stay around. That's all we have to do. Just stay. That's all we got to do. Just stay in business. I love it. Well, Max, it's always great to see you. I wish we had the show longer sometimes so I could really get in deep and geek out with you a little bit more. But for all the listeners, as Max just said, if you want to, grow your back of house operations and actually scale right with Sojo, grab a 30-day free sample kit with us, link in the show notes. And of course, like always, before actually give you a quick shout out, Terry White, giving you superstar account manager over there, some recognition with the team. But love having you on the show. For our listeners, links in the show notes. Obviously, make sure you like and subscribe to all things Sojo and make sure that they get the Good Morning Hospitality love. But until then, see you guys again next week.